This is the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show number 62. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And my name's Senyo Nyakutse in Montreal.
Coming up on the show, we get the lowdown on batting with Gary Palmer, and we talk to the former England analyst Mark Garraway about coaching in Ireland. But first, let's welcome our guest co-host, Senyo Nyakutse. Happy New Year, Senyo.
Thank you, David. Happy New Year to you too. All the best for 2010.
Yes, fingers crossed it's going to be the best year ever.
Yes, I'm with you on that one.
Now, you've been on the show recently talking about your work coaching and running things at Cricket Montreal. This time of year, January, is it a busy time for you?
With the indoor work, yes, it is a pretty busy time. It's right in the middle of winter, so it's a ton of snow outside. Virtually impossible to do anything outdoors. But we do have a pretty good gym regime going right now, so a lot of off-season training.
What type of stuff are you be doing?
I've actually got a couple of the guys trying out the DuraBand system you sent over.
Oh, yes, yeah.
That is phenomenal.
Really?
Oh, yes. For somebody with challenges like I have, which is introducing the sport and, you know, going through a million different things all at the same time, kind of, this attacks both the fitness and the technical side of things. You can basically, by following the guidelines and the workout that you sent me, I love it. The kids love it.
Well, let's talk about that, because we haven't actually mentioned this on the show. The DuraBand is something that that our friend of the show, Ian Pont, has brought into cricket. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about it and you know, what happened when the packet arrived and all that kind of thing.
Okay. I got a quick introduction to the product by browsing online. When it arrived at the door, it's basically a nicely packaged little black bag with a couple of elastic resistance training bands, a very, very, very well-crafted bat handle to replicate one that we would basically a regular cricket bat, a cricket ball with an attachment for the elastic, for the rubber bands, and a couple of handles, a couple of other very useful pieces to the puzzle. It allows you to basically have a complete gym session at home. Gym session in the sense of cricket-specific exercises. You can work your core. You can practice certain shots. You can build the muscles and hand speed necessary to play those shots and to play them well. And it's great as a variation to a net system. If you have three or four kids too many at a net session and you want to keep them busy and keep them active without sending them off to run aimlessly, basically, it's a great addition to a training setup.
And there's, I sent you over a training program with a few exercises in it. How is that going?
Challenging.
Yeah.
Extremely. I tried it out myself. I wanted to do so before I gave it to any of the kids to try.
Yeah.
It's very basic, very simple exercises, and yet extremely challenging and extremely effective if executed properly. So I was very happy with it. And the fact that we're using the rubber bands makes it easy to gauge for kids of any age. I had 8-year-olds, a 15-year-old, and myself having a go at everything. And with a correct introduction, it's as simple as that.
And what are the players reporting in terms of not only enjoying the workouts? Because, of course, one of the challenges with getting kids to work out is a lot of kids see it as, you know, a negative thing. They don't like doing it. They think it's boring. So not only the not only that side, but also the fitness improvements. How's that going?
It's a little bit too early to give you registered results. What I'll be able to do is basically get back to you in the middle of January with some results on the Pitch Vision system.
Okay.
I can tell you that the kids tell me that they feel a lot more athletic, not necessarily on the same day or the day after, but a week and a half into it, the kids find that their core is a lot stronger. A couple of them who are having a little bit of lower back problems, a few niggles here and there, because they had a slightly mixed action, sorted their action out, worked on it a bit with the Duraband cricket ball and the resistance bands. Amazing. The kids are loving it. They don't see it as training. They see it as a way to improve the sport.
And, of course, you had a big hand in bringing cricket to a lot of kids in the area.
Yes, in the province of Quebec, I've had a great time doing that. It's progressed. The transition is in place from all the plastic stuff to the real cricket. We had a good summer camp this year, outdoors. All the kids adapted very well. Even in the indoor facilities, we only use, you know, real cricket balls and padding and everything, which, as trivial as it may seem to people in cricket-growing countries, is actually a pretty big deal in Canada. I did a radio documentary last week about the development of cricket. One of the things that came up was the parents refer to a cricket ball as the rock. So, you know, it's one of those things that we have to deal with. We have our Pitch Vision batting coach, Gary Palmer, is back with us today with a new tip. He's a former first-class cricketer for Somerset, and his goal is to help young cricketers make it into the professional game. If you'd like to find out more about Gary Palmer, please feel free to do so on www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer.
Hi, Gary. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Dave. Nice to talk to you again.
This week's question is from Naj, and he says he's facing a problem when he tries to drive the ball through cover or extra cover. Most of the time, he edges it towards either gully or point. What's going wrong there?
Well, either he's playing at balls that he should be leaving, too wide of the wicket or the crease or the pitch. He could be stepping straight across the crease to the ball rather than looking to get his head and foot up the wicket. So therefore, you just get dragged across the crease, half a bat, very, very open face, and obviously you've got a very good chance of nicking it or hitting it towards gully. Maybe he's picking the bat up with his right arm tucked into his body and the bat face is opening way too much. Maybe his top hand grip is too far around to the edge of the bat. You know, the really old-fashioned way would be right down the outside edge. Again, that would make the bat face too open. Again, we're talking about someone being probably too sideways. Maybe they're closed off in their stance. You know, if that player stood more open, they would be, that would lure them to actually step up the wicket more than rather than straight across the wicket. So, and also maybe that's where he's actually trying to score his runs, in the gap square of the wicket, rather than, you know, hit it up towards mid-off or extra cover area. Either that or he's got someone bowling magic balls at him every ball, and that bowler should be playing for England.
Yeah. Well, if that's the case, Naj, if you've got a bowler who's bowling that well to you, then yeah, get them into the England setup as soon as possible.
Just one other thing on that point. The bottom hand, if the bottom hand V is too far around to the outside edge of the bat, again, that can cause someone to pick the bat up much too open. So this player needs to check out their grip, make sure the bottom hand V is going straight down the middle of the back of the bat, and the top hand V is just slightly offset to the side. Open up their shoulder in their stance. Their preferred sort of target air wants to be more up the wicket rather than square of the wicket on the offside. I mean, the other thing it could be is when you stand in your stance, the bat should be tipped into the toes. Some people have the bat way too open, so the edge of the bat is not, you know, towards their toes. So straight away, by the time you pick it up, it's going to be too open again, and the chances are you're going to slice the ball. Backswing is also key here. If the backswing is going behind you over leg stump, again, you're going to slice the ball.
Thanks, Gary. And if you'd like to find out more coaching tips from Gary Palmer, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer.
And we've got another interview for you this week as well. Quite an interesting one this week because we're talking to Mark Garraway, who used to be the England analyst, the chap you see on the television stuck behind the laptop recording every ball as it's bowled for the England team. He's moved on from England now. He's now working for Ireland. Before that, he played first-class cricket for Hampshire. In Ireland, he's developing the sport across the nation. And I caught up with him at the end of last year for a chat, so let's have a listen to what Mark has to say. What does your role at Ireland Cricket involve?
Pretty much everything, from the international side all the way down to grassroots cricket, to be honest. And the role's a very broad one, but deliberately so, because there's lots of systems within any cricket and organisation, and the key thing is to try and get the systems to link in together. So there's a clear pathway for players and coaches to start off at various levels and end up in international cricket, whilst also supporting the different environments that players go through along that process.
Well, that sounds quite interesting. So what does that involve day to day? Is it kind of a strategic type job, or do you get your hands dirty?
Yeah, I don't get to get my hands dirty in terms of coaching on a massively regular basis. At the moment, in particular, it's very strategic. We're setting things up and really helping coaches and the systems, the clubs, the regional development programs to be working in a far more sort of efficient fashion, really. I have got some opportunity coming up in the next few months to do some coaching, which I'm very excited about as well, because that's something that I do want to keep going. Certainly at the moment I'm very strategic based, and there's been a lot of work done already in the first sort of 4 months that I've been here, which is tried to modernise some of the practices that are going on and try to educate the coaches and the people within the structure in ways more in line with, I suppose, full member country status.
And what types of things would that involve?
An area, for example, that came up was the playing of spin. Because of the wickets and because of various things, it's not an area that Irish players have generally mastered and have often been exposed at all of the various levels when spinners have come on. So we did a little bit of statistical analysis to try and get some benchmarking sort of stats, and also link that into some coaches' opinions. So I canvassed the opinions of coaches like Phil Simmons, for example, who looks after the senior team, Aidy Birrell, who was the World Cup 2007 coach, who did some fantastic work, as well as other coaches working up and down. And we came up with a program for the coaches initially for them to follow. So we did some regional development workshops on that. And then ultimately for the players to do within their regional development programs and also national squads as part of the skill set. So that was one example. We chose three different topics which we went after, and that's been the sort of mainstay of the first 3 months of the winter program.
How important is the recreational game in your plans?
Massively so, because for us, it's the level that presently sits beneath our international team. And I think it's becoming more and more important all the way around the world. But at the moment, for Ireland, it's incredibly important that we have the best possible cricketers playing in recreational cricket on the best facilities, because ultimately that is the springboard into the international team. So all of the achievements that the Ireland side 2007 and then in the 2020 in England this year has come from the recreational games. So for us, it's absolutely crucial that we get that side of things working well. And it's already worked brilliantly well in providing Ireland with the cricketers that have gone on to topple sides like Pakistan and Bangladesh and should have beaten England at the back end of August. We've got Australia next year, and you know, the likes of Ricky Ponting and Brett Lee are going to be competing against guys whose level of cricket beneath the international team is largely going to be based around the recreational game.
And what are the simple improvements that you can make that you can bring in quickly and see fast improvements?
Well, in terms of coach education, which is, you know, part of our conversation here, there's been a system operating in Ireland, because obviously you've got Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, where some of the input going into the coaches either side of the border has been different. So one of the first ports of call for myself was to try and standardise that, working with various agencies, which has been Coaching Ireland, which is a southern-based agency that looks after coaching across all sports, and then also UKCC and Sports Coach UK. So trying to come to some sort of programmed effect where we have the same things being taught to our coaches. I mean, that's a fairly sort of elementary thing, but it's something that we've worked on for the last few months. And standardising some of the coaching practices that are going on around the country. So our better coaches that are working within regional programs and national programs are having some continual professional development, which is something that ECB have put a lot of effort and energy into, and it's something that we're replicating now over here. So by improving your coaches, you give a really good opportunity for the players to develop as well, as we all know. And so that's been the main thrust of my work so far. And then structurally, trying to make sure that all of the formats that we're playing underneath international cricket are mirroring international cricket as well. So every player that goes up through the pathways is well practiced in 2020 and one day international regulations as well is massively important.
Of course, you've also been an England analyst.
Yep.
Are there any things that you learned while you were doing that job that might surprise the traditionalists? Any coaching things that came out of your analysis that sort of buck the traditions?
It's not so much bucking the traditions, really. I think what I learned was to sort of concrete my thoughts anyway, really, in statistical terms, because generally when we coach from an anecdotal point of view, from a message passed down through generation to generation, or based on our observations. And the thing about performance analysis has been the facts are there to support a lot of that stuff. So that was the main thing for me. And it's something that I hope to employ quite well over here in Ireland as well. We have an analyst that works with the international team, and he's been passing his knowledge and his stats and his information onto the level of the coaches sitting underneath the international senior side as well. And I've been encouraging him to do that, and he's done a fantastic job at taking really core information down the different levels within Irish cricket.
Okay, finally, with your coaching hat on, with your hands dirty coaching hat on, if you could just give one piece of advice to a young player who's listening to this, who's out there, who's trying to become successful, what would you say to that person?
Well, it goes to psychology, really, because the best players that I've worked with in the world, they know what psychologists and coaches call their A game. Mm-hmm. They know how they play. They know how they prepare and how they play. And they basically look to replicate that on a daily basis. So you look at somebody like Graham Smith that I had as my captain at Somerset. His routines would be very, very consistent every single time he goes to prepare for a cricket match. You talk to Kevin Peterson. Kevin never judged himself on his outcomes. He judged himself merely on his preparation, because if he's put his preparation into place, then it gives him the maximum possible chance of being successful on the field. And that comes down to knowing your A game. When Kev does his preparation in terms of his physical preparation, his mental preparation, his net preparation, his drills preparation, he gives himself the best chance of being successful. That gives him the confidence that he then gets and takes into his matches, and that's why he's a very successful cricketer. So understanding your own game, understanding the things that get you into that zone where you play your A game are absolutely crucial. And that would be my biggest lesson to any young cricketer.
Thanks, Mark, for your time, and a happy new year to you. Okay, let's move on to the listeners' questions. We've got a couple of questions from listeners. So, Senor, if it's all right with you, we'll see if we can help solve a couple of problems for these young players.
Let's give it a go.
Okay, first of all, we've got a question from a 15-year-old player in Western Australia. I don't have his name here, unfortunately. But he plays second-grade men's cricket, which is a pretty high standard for 15-year-olds. But he also plays under-17s cricket, and he's the captain of his under-17s team. So he's keeping himself busy. But he says, unfortunately, this has put a massive workload on my plate, as I now have to worry about each individual player as well as myself, and my performance is taking a beating. I'm a spinning all-rounder, but so far I can't get a start with the bat. In the nets, I can face pace very easily and have been putting in lots of work into facing spin, but in two games, I've made only 11 runs and have been bowled by a quick bowler both times. Is this because I'm putting pressure on myself or just technique? What do you think, Senya?
That's a very good question. I wouldn't blame my technique as of yet. Two games into the season is kind of early. It is definitely not a confidence booster to get your stumps knocked over that early in the season, especially yes. doing work. I've lived through the pressures of the transition from being what would be considered a key player to being a captain. I would say for him to focus on doing two individual jobs really well. Actually, in his case, three, because he's a spinning all-rounder. When he's bowling, he needs to focus on his bowling. Maybe pass on a bit of the challenge of field setting to the wicketkeeper or the vice-captain so he can focus on bowling. When it's time for him to go out to bat, what he needs to do is to basically shed the captain jacket and put on his batsman's jacket. Deal with each individual task as an individual task. What's your take on that, David?
Well, I was going to ask you about the psychological side. What do you have any thoughts about, you know, ways that you can take the pressure off yourself, the way you can compartmentalize like that? How did you do it when you were captain? How did you?
I always just I basically talked to myself. I told myself that captaincy is a cap that you wear when you're out in the field. Mm-hmm. It does come with a ton of responsibility, and if you deal with your captain's roles, if you study them, talk to your coach, make sure you're on the same page, doing what he expects you to do out in the field, then without thinking, without really breaking stride, the captain's hat kind of took shape and fitted very well. It became more of an additional task, which kept me busy out there, which kept me sharp.
I think you can only talk from experience, really, can't you, and how you did something yourself. I mean, I know from my experience as a captain, I'm a wicketkeeper, so captaincy and wicketkeeping don't often go together very well. But I find it very easy to do both of those. Mm. And I find it very easy to be able to switch between being a captain and being a wicketkeeper. But it's in a similar way, it's like being a captain and being a bowler. Being a bowler, you have to think about your bowling, and you have to think about what the batsman's doing, and then you have to switch into captaincy mode when you're not bowling. So it's a similar kind of thing, bowler and wicketkeeper. I think the key is to do think of it like a switch. That's my opinion anyway. I think probably bowling is the hardest thing, so especially being I think the fast bowlers find it the hardest.
Yeah, I agree.
But spinners less so. But it's still hard because you still have to, you know, you still have to almost do two things at once, but you can't. So you almost like when they talk about fielding, and you have to switch on and switch off when you're fielding because you can't concentrate all the time when you're fielding. Yeah. You have to learn how to think of it as a perhaps not a switch, but more like a volume control. And you've got two volume controls, and you turn the volume down on the captaincy when you're bowling.
Yeah.
And turn the volume up on the bowling, and then you turn the volume down on the bowling and the volume back up on the captaincy. And if you imagine it in that way, then you're not trying to think of two things at once. I think as soon as you get yourself thinking of more than one thing at once, you lose the clarity of mind. And as soon as you lose that, that's where you're going wrong.
I think that is about as well worded as I've ever heard it. I'm definitely going to make sure everyone that has more than one task at Cricket Montreal listens to that exact paragraph that you just said. That was brilliant. The volume buttons is very visual and is very practical too. I like that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And also, the other thing I'd say is preparation is probably more important to an all-rounder captain than anybody else. You have to train three times as hard as anybody else to get to the same place.
That's right.
Because all-rounders have to train twice as hard. Captains, it has to be three times as hard. Because the worst thing you can do is be a captain and not be scoring any runs and not be taking any wickets. Because everyone's turning around to look at you going, hang on a minute, he's not even worth his place in the team. Why is he captain?
Yeah. That's the last thing you want is your buddies to turn on you.
Exactly. So if you're spending an hour in the nets at the moment, start spending three.
Fair enough.
That's easier said than done. I know it's, you know, it's probably easier said than done. But if you're serious about doing all three, then that's the only, in my mind anyway, that's the only way to do it. The only other thing to do is to give up one or two of those roles and just focus on doing just being a batsman or just being a bowler or being just being a batsman and captain or just being a bowler and captain. Because to do all three is a lot of pressure.
True. For any cricketer, for any level, it is a lot of pressure.
Yeah, not many have done it successfully over the years. I think Ray Illingworth springs to mind as a very successful all-rounder captain. But I can't think of many who have done it, certainly not at the highest level, for any length of time. And, of course, Andrew Flintoff spectacularly failed at it, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Unfortunately, yes, he did.
Right, let's move on to the next question.
Okay.
Which is the last question for this week. And this is from Farhad in Bangladesh. He's a left-arm pace bowler. And he says the main problem he has at the moment is when he reaches the bowling crease, he slows down. So it's a problem with his run-up. Okay. So what are the things that, when you see a young player slowing down as they approach the crease, what are the things, the coaching tips that you give them?
I would basically ask them to restructure their run-up. I would ask them to begin with and basically break it into three parts. Mm-hmm. You have your introduction, you have your gathering momentum, you have your building up pace, building up momentum to hit the wicket, which is the middle bit, and then there's your delivery stride, basically your bound, jumping up, getting your load, and then, you know, running through the crease.
Yeah.
I would basically ask him to bowl from the bowling crease backwards. Stand at an area that I would guess to be their approximate run-up with a cone or with a stick if I didn't have a cone, and put that stick in the ground wherever they land, wherever their front foot, bowling foot lands. I'd ask them to do that a few times. I'd ask them to basically bowl two overs in the opposite direction and try to find as common of a run-up point as I possibly could and try to get them to understand the functionality of a run-up and the reason why hitting the crease with so much momentum is important. I think with those three together, you should be able to restructure his run-up and kind of iron out that little wrinkle.
Yeah, and the key, of course, isn't to be hitting the bound at the maximum speed, is it?
No, sorry.
You've got to be in that nice rhythm, haven't you? There's that phase, as you say, there's that phase where you get up to a certain speed and then you kind of maintain that speed over a period just before you jump into it.
Exactly.
So slowing down is not good, but sort of maintaining a level speed just before takeoff is the ultimate aim, isn't it?
Yes, to be consistent as you hit the ball increase and to carry that momentum through. Yeah, I think that would be key. What do you recommend? What would you suggest?
Yeah, I think that's a really good thing to do. Actually, just start again if you like. Probably I would guess. I mean, from the young players that I've seen, I would guess that he's probably a little bit nervous coming up to the crease about where his feet are going to end up, and maybe he's had a few no ball problems in the past or something like that. And he's just not quite sure about where he's going to land. So to try and get a little bit more control, he's slowing down. I mean, it's only natural that, you know, if you want to do something a bit more carefully, you slow down at it. And that's true anything in life, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, I think probably maybe even strip it back a phase even further. Get him completely away. Take away the ball. Take away even the wickets. Take away everything. Just get him running up and down in the outfield with his eyes closed. And maybe finding where that natural rhythm is, where that point is, where it's a natural rhythm. And as you say, do it a few times, don't just do it a couple of times. Do it maybe 12, 15 times, and then measure it out, and then bring him back then to the stumps and do it again from there.
A great recommendation for young fast bowlers would be the Andy Caddick course. Long story short, the Andy Caddick course is brilliant. It's got a very good breakdown for anyone who wants to learn how to be a good, consistent fast bowler. Its emphasis is not on technical stuff, it's more on feeling. I would strongly recommend that to anyone looking to drastically improve their bowling.
It's available on Pitch Vision Academy, which is of course at pitchvision.com, and we had a great day down in Taunton filming that. And Andy's, of course, a very fine bowler, and you know, he once took over 100 wickets in a county championship season, which is no mean feat when you see the kind of wickets that he has to bowl on at Taunton. And very, very flat and very short boundaries. And you know, to take 100 wickets is brilliant. And he did that through the consistency that he had over the years, right up until he retired. You know, he was still bowling consistently at 39 in first-class cricket. And there was talk of him coming back in the 2005 Ashes for that one-off last game because he was bowling so well. And that was when he was in his mid-30s. So to have somebody like that who not only was a great bowler, but also is a great talker, and he knows how to get that point across, and he knows how to explain to somebody else how they can get a similar consistency. That was a real coup for us. So, yeah, that is an excellent course, and we had a lot of fun filming. It was a beautiful day in Taunton, and he hadn't bowled for about 5 weeks because he'd been injured, and he was very stiff and sore by the end of it.
It's also quite a feat because you hear a lot of myths amongst professional players and people that have been playing for a long time that the side-on action is one that almost guarantees a bowler's shorter lifespan than a front-on action. So it's nice to see a side-on bowler bowling well into their late 30s and doing well at it. It's just, it proves to the young kids out there that you don't have to be front-on if you want to be an effective fast bowler.
No, absolutely. You know, there's some very fine fast bowlers who bowled many, many overs, bowled with classical side on actions. Of course, Fred Truman springs to mind as well. Of course, a great, great side on fast bowler. So I think the key with injury prevention in fast bowlers is, which is talked about a lot, but it's worth saying again, is that as long as you keep the shoulders and the hips aligned, then and you're not getting any twisting at the lower back, then you're in the right position. Of course, that's a combination of lots of different factors. That's technique, that's core strength. You know, when people talk about core strength, that's important. And mobility in your hips and mobility in your upper back. If you've got those things, then you should be injury-free as long as you can keep those hips and those shoulders aligned.
Yeah, true.
Okay, well, that just about wraps up the show for the first show for 2010. Don't forget, you can get even more cricket coaching tips on our website at www.pitchvision.com. The site's updated daily. You can also subscribe to the show for free in iTunes. Just look for My Cricket Coach in the search box, or you can click on the Subscribe in iTunes button on this week's show notes. If you've got any questions for the coaches, you can email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. So until then, this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And Senyon Yakutse in Montreal.